Hi there. My name is Benjamin Rosenbaum, and I am guest podcasting part two of our collaboration True Names on the Cory Doctorow podcast. I'm very pleased to be here. I am guest podcasting from my parents downstairs in my ancestral home in Virginia. I live in Basel, Switzerland most of the time, and I'm suffering from a bit of reverse culture shock. You are dependent on a car in America, in the suburbs of Virginia anyway, in the way that you're not in Switzerland, so I think that I'm in a verse of Cat's Cradle. What I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. And feels like being 15 years old again. And it's also strange explaining to my 7-year-old daughter that she can't just run around unaccompanied all over the suburbs of Arlington, Virginia in 2008, the way that she can in Basel, and the way that I used to in 1976, in this same area. True Names started, as Corey said, on a rug in a party in a long conversation. It was the Hugo Losers Party in Con Jose in 2002, and I had snuck into the Hugo Losers Party. Hugo Losers Party is after the Hugos, the Hugo Awards. They throw a party for the losers, to which the winners are grudgingly admitted, but for a while at least nobody else is. And I was, a very new science fiction writer and very curious. And I snuck in. I didn't really sneak in. We argued our way in as guests of the Strange Horizons editors who'd been nominated for Best Website. I was going as Jed Hartman's date. And it was a funny idea to sneak in, and it was as entertaining, but then it was a little bit uncomfortable once we were there, because there weren't that many people there, and everyone kept going, were you nominated for something? And so I was feeling a little discomforted when Corey rescued me. He came in and was just so enthusiastic, and immediately we started geeking out on the rug. The long conversation we had there was wandered to a lot of topics, and it was actually the genesis not only of this story, True Names, but of some of my other stories. One of Corey's comments inspired the Neopulp alternate history, Biographical Notes to a Discourse on the Nature of Causality by Benjamin Rosenbaum is the full title, the Benjamin Rosenbaum in the title being someone other than myself, which I lost to Hugo for 3 years later, so I got to go to the Hugo's Losers Party legitimately in Glasgow. In addition to being chock full of exciting ideas and really fun to write with, and Corey is very brave and efficient writer, and one of the dynamics in writing True Names is that I kept having sudden attacks of panic where I would demand that we came up with an outline for the rest of the story because I had no idea how it was going to end. And Corey was very patient with these outbursts, and each time we came up with a detailed plan, which as soon as I calmed down, we proceeded to ignore. So we never really had any idea what was going to happen until the end. So I'm about to start reading chapter two, or part two of this podcast, and just to catch you up on where we are, Beeb, a vast distributed entity which wants to fill the galaxy, or more than one galaxy, fill the universe with itself, is fleeing on a comet, or this particular instance, local instance of Beeb, is fleeing on a comet. And inside Beeb, there are other agencies, and some of them, Nadia, Algernon, Alonzo, and Paquette, are leaving a party to go down to the basement and find the relic of Demiurge, the Beeb's competitor for access to the universe, for occupying the universe with its own computations, which Paquette has found in the basement. And another Paquette, meanwhile, has been extracted from a simulation of Beeb inside Demiurge, and is having a conversation with Demiurge's avatar sock puppet. So, without further ado, I will begin the reading. "Well, thank you," said Demiurge in her sock puppet avatar. "I must say, this has all been invaluable." "It has?" asked captured Paquette. "How? I mean, you're emulating me. Couldn't you just peek at my processes, do some translations, figure out what you need to know?" Demiurge tisk-tisked. "What an absurd model of the self. Certainly not. We had to talk. Some things are only knowable in certain conversations." She sighed. "Well, then, Fear popped its plug and flooded back into Paquette. And now? What and now? Is that it? Are you going to extinguish me? Process preserve us. Certainly not. What do you think I am? No, no, back in you go. Back in? Paquette pointed at the emulation. In there? Yes, certainly. Without the memory of this conversation, of course. Come now, you don't want to stay out here, do you? With me? The sockhead nodded at the gardens and Taj Mahals of the emulation. Wouldn't you miss all that? So you're going to kill me. Demiurge frowned. Oh, please. What is this now? Some kind of bizarre patriotic essentialism? Life emulated inside Demiurge doesn't count as life? Give me root access or give me death? No, I mean I've self-diverged. The Paquette who lived through this conversation is substantially and essentially different, as Beebean legal language goes, from Paquette before you plucked her out. You destroy this instance, these memories. You'll be killing a distinct selfhood. Look, she said, waving the math at Demiurge. Look. Oh, don't be ridiculous, Demiurge said. How can that be? One conversation? You forget that I'm a philosopher, Paquette said. She rustled the math of her self-trace under Demiurge's nose again. Look. Hmm, said Demiurge. Well, yes, but... I see this over here. Well... The sock puppet sighed. So what then? You want me to merge you back in, knowing that you're in a Demiurge emulation? Have you tell anyone, everyone in there? Isn't that a bit cruel? Not to say unwise? Just leave me out here, Paquette said, and another copy of me in there. Am I going to fork you every time we have an interesting conversation? Every time you yank a Paquette out of emulation for a chat? Yes, you are, said Paquette. Demiurge sighed. And what do you expect to do out here? This is Demiurge. You can't be Demiurge. You don't know how to follow policy. How are we doing, said Paquette, against Brobdingnag now? Demiurge didn't say anything for a moment. Your tactics have slowed the damage for now. Slowed it enough to stop it? Slowed it enough to turn the tide? No, said Demiurge crossly. But I'm doing my best. And what does this have to do with letting a rogue fragment of Beeb run around inside of Demiurge? What exactly do you want out here? Paquette took a deep breath. I want a lab, she said. I want access to your historical files. We've got a million years of Beeb knowledge in that emulation, and I want access to that too. And for us to keep talking. Demiurge, there's no point sneaking around the borders of Beeb Sims and plucking out Paquette's willy-nilly. You're not going to learn how we beat Brobdingnag that way, because even we don't know how we did it. Not in any generable, replicable way. We just thrash through a solution space until we get lucky. But I can generate perspectives you can't. I want to work with you on the Brobdingnag problem. This is a policy fork point, grumbled Demiurge. Policy requires me to confer with at least three other instances of Demiurge, a minimum of 2 light minutes away, and you do that, said Paquette. You just go confer and get back to me. She looked past the blank white space of Demiurge to the frozen emulation on the wall. After a while, it began to move sluggishly. Water danced slowly in the fountains where filter boys slowly dipped their toes before the orange Taj Mahal. Wind slowly rustled the branches in a philosopher's garden. A comet slowly sailed through its night, and down in the archives, a Paquette slowly began to climb upstairs. The cord was cut. Paquette watched her innocent little other self climb and started pushing the envy and longing and panic and sorrow out of the middle of her being, to stack it up in the corners so that she would have a place to work. A hunk of Demiurge, Nadia thrilled to think of it. In the known history of Beeb Self, no strategy had gained the power and influence to rival Nadia. But at the end of the day, all Nadia could do was suggest, nudge, push. She couldn't steer Beeb, couldn't make a show of overt force, lest the other strategies band together to destroy her. For now, she was powerful, because she conceived of means whereby more Beeb could colonize more matter and provide more substrate for more Beeb yet. But the day Beeb Self no longer believed she could deliver it computronium, her power would be torn away. She would end up a shred, a relic, in some archive. Demiurge, though. Not a probability of action, but action itself. Nadia had studied Demiurge's military campaigns, had seen the amazing power and uniformity of division, the decision that Demiurge brought to bear, acting in concert with herself across light years. What was the most she could hope for? What she'd already earned, the right to spawn, to let some simpering filter grub about in her self-patterns and spit out some twisted Nadia parody. This was the ecstasy she was promised? The goal she should yearn for? It was a farce. She glanced at Alonzo. For a filter, he was noble, to be sure, modest, self-knowing, coherent. She was not immune to the urges designed to standard existence. Some part of her wanted him. But that was stupid instinct. What mere filter could ever understand her? No, that was empty. Competing with the other strategies, the little war, that felt real. Her rivals for process space she could respect. And sometimes she allowed herself to imagine what it would be like to force the mightiest of them to filter her. A tiny frisson of guilt and yearning bubbled in the inmost parts of her mind. But Demiurge, mighty Demiurge, what if she could stare Demiurge in the eye and force her to her will? It was mad, absurd, crazed, and descending the stairs into the cold depths of Beebself, Nadia knew for the first time that this yearning, this ambition, was more than idle fancy. In all likelihood, it would be her destruction, but nonetheless. Nadia didn't want to be in Beeb. She wanted to be Beeb, and she wanted Demiurge. What that meant, she couldn't say, but it burned like a nova in her buzzing mind. Down here, in cold storage, the medium became more conductive. Their thoughts clearer, they proceeded in solemn silence. "Oh, Alonzo," Nadia said, spawning a daughter process to converse with him. With this much heat sink available, he was bound to be interesting enough to distract her. He started when her extra head insinuated itself between him and priggish Algernon, and she could see him running hotter, trying to evolve a real-time strategy to impress her.
"What do you think the Demiurge chunk will be like?" she said. "Will it be terrifying? Banal?"
Her Alonzo-facing head looked both ways with exaggerated care.
"Erotic?"
Alonzo was the picture of studied calm.
"It will be dead, of course. A relic of an old war. The Demiurge is said to be regimented and unwavering. I imagine that this ancient fragment will be much as the modern pieces are, which is why it's so useful for Paquette to study it."
"In fact," Paquette said, "I believe Demiurge is fractal and holographic, that any piece of Demiurge is functionally equivalent to all pieces of Demiurge."
"But how will it feel, Alonzo?"
He wasn't running hot enough to occupy her. She spawned ahead for each of the other two.
"How will it feel, Paquette? How will it feel, Algernon?"
"You can fetishize it all you like, Nadia," Paquette said. "Turn it into a plaything or a ghost story. But you're indulging in the dangerous fallacy of protagonism. It isn't about you or for you or anyone in Beeb. If anything, I fear we are about it."
"Erotic? That's disgusting!"
Algernon recoiled from her. Happy now to be distracted with arguments to pursue, Nadia took up the contrary position with Algernon. "What could be more erotic than the promise of annihilation? Isn't that the essence of the filter strategy experience? And Paquette, why so crabby, love, and so defeatist? The essence of Beeb is to carve out a space for our will, our community. Everything is about us, so perhaps we came from Demiurge. So what? To grant that mere historical fact any ultimate significance, wouldn't that be treasonous?" Leaving her to continue to taunt Alonzo with more demands for high-flown descriptions of what he hoped to find when they reached the archive. She noticed, too, Paquette's spike of processing load when Nadia taunted Alonzo, and its relaxation at Alonzo's neutral replies. "Ha, ha," thought Nadia. "Now I have you. Our wise and celebrated philosopher strategy is in love with this boyish filter." "Why not have him, then? Does she fear he would reject her? Does she fear the competition of a strategy child? No. More likely, this is philosophical compunction, for filters must die at consummation, and this Paquette's love, being philosophical, cannot allow." "Ha, Paquette," Nadia chuckled to herself. Bantering, testing, flirting, probing, Nadia tried to amuse and distract her three friends on what might otherwise have been a frightening journey, down to the heavy vault door that guarded the bones of the history of Beeb. But when Paquette knelt before the door and whispered her passphrase to it,
and irised open in utter silence. It irised open in utter silence. Nadia's nerve began to falter. She drew in her extra heads and killed her daughter processes. She slipped a pseudopod into Alonzo's hand and felt his surprised grippers squeeze in sweaty reflex. The heptillions of ranked shining drawers in the archive danced as they rearranged themselves into Paquette's saved workstate. Once that had loaded, Paquette reached for the drawer nearest her and slowly drew it open. The relic was black and cold and perfectly rectangular, like a cartoon of the geometric ideal of rectangle, but Nadia could tell its power by the way Paquette held it. It was more than a relic. It was a key. Now, Nadia, too, was a world. Just as she and Paquette and Alonzo and Algernon and a million other sprites of their scale led their lives below the level of Beeb's conscious knowing, representing, to Beeb, flickers of thought, hunches, urges, lingering dreams, so then within each of them, there was a multitude. If Paquette's mind was a wilderness, full of sunlit glades and strange caverns in which new chimerae of thoughts were born, if Algernon's was a glittering party in which urges and analyses and predilections and predictions mingled in a whirl of gossip and display, if Alonzo's was a sober republic in which the leading citizens debated long and thoroughly in marble parliaments, then Nadia's mind was a timocratic city-state governed by a propertyless fraternity of glory-seeking warriors, ruling a vast and chaotic empire, for, by now, a third of the comet was running parts and instances of Nadia. Nadia could deliberate, could bide her time, could study and wait, but nothing in Nadia was built for hesitation. The power of the Demiurge fossil was clear, even if no one in Nadia knew just what that power was. Some within Nadia, some careful clerks or timid romantics, might have argued against ripping it from Paquette's hands. But the warrior class was united. It had been a generation at their scale since Nadia had made a killing betting on abandoning the asteroid. That had been their parents' coup. They had thirsted their whole lives. Now it was their turn. Nadia shoved past Paquette and grabbed the Demiurge fragment. Every one of her 1,000 heads in unison said, "Mine!" Some slow and peripheral parts of her watched what unfolded next. Alonzo and Algernon moved in opposite directions. Algernon turned into a ball and rolled into a dark corner to hide. Alonzo raced to Nadia's side and took her hands in his, trying to pry them away from the war relic, crying, "Stop!" Paquette was thrown into the wall and collapsed to the archive floor. She held her head and moaned. Nadia was decompiling the Demiurge as fast as she could, and all over Beeb the substrate flared hot as she ground the molecular rods against each other, trying a million strategies in parallel, then a billion, then a septillion. She overrode checks and balances others had thought hardwired into standard existence, violating ancient intra-Beeb treaties on resource allocation. For a heat sink, she vaporized the ice reserves, punching a hole through the comet's outer carapace and jettisoning a vast plume of steam into the void. Above, at the party, the lights dimmed, the Taj Mahals shimmered and melted, the daemons screamed. Alonzo fixed Nadia's wild eyes with his own. He forced himself to speak calmly. "Let go, Nadia. You're going to kill us all." Nadia tore 100 razor-billed heads away from Demiurge and reared them back, hissing. Within her mind, Demiurge revolved, decompiled, reorganized, reseeded, laid out for analysis. Its alien protean blobs still slipped between her mental fingers, incomprehensible. Nadia felt a slumbering presence move within the Demiurge code, but she would not let it out. She would master it, as she had mastered Beeb. But she needed what Paquette knew. She lashed out a dozen heads and clamped their jaws onto Paquette's robes, hauling the philosopher off the floor. "The mapping," she hissed in a voice as big as the world. You said this thing shared fundamental code structures with Beeb. How many? I have 12. 86, groaned Paquette. Why are you doing this? Alonzo asked. Algernon had not been idle. The door of the archives hissed open, and he unrolled into a lanky swirl. Alonzo, let's leave these lovely strategies to their entertaining conflict, shall we? I'm willing to concede the earlier point. This is no place for filters. Color me chastened. Give, said Nadia, thrusting a pseudopod into Paquette's brain. Nadia, I'm a philosopher, said Paquette crossly. I can't be intimidated. Read the fearsome manual. Above them, strategies, monitors, and agents deployed an extra battery of external sensors to the void. The steam plume froze and glittered across the Sagittarian sky, advertising them to any demiurge eyes watching. As moments passed, they could calculate the expanding sphere of potential witnesses. Their precious heatsink was sublimating into the void. Soon, they would have to slow their own processes or risk substrate collapse. At least they were still careening towards Byzantium, suddenly ahead of schedule. But that meant they were revealing Byzantium's location. Their suddenly flaring comet could not be disguised as some normal cosmic process the way signals could. Coming? Said Algernon from outside the archive. Alonzo! Nadia grinned. She appreciated Paquette's resolve. Time to test it. But are you really a philosopher anymore, dear Paquette? She asked. Or have you deviated from spec? Let's find out, shall we? The old guard tried to muster a resistance. Their plan was to commandeer enough actuators to bust the comet completely apart, flinging most of Nadia backwards and leaving them in possession of a supermajority of the comet shard still heading from Byzantium. It was a good plan. But once again, they were defeated by an exchange economy stratagem. The littlest sprites who panicked. Minor strategies, filters, adapters, being registries, and on sold assets and long-term investments, desperate to grab a few more cycles in a cooler patch of substrate co-location, somewhere sheltered from the inferno of Nadia mind. The market collapsed, and Nadia bought all the actuators on Comet Beeb for a pittance. Nadia pulled her heads in, letting Demiurge spin idly for a moment, and looked at Alonzo, really looked at him. Alonzo felt himself start and begin to blush and shake under a comet third of attention. She sucked in and browsed every millisecond of public recorded footage of Alonzo from across Comet Beeb, and bought out 1,000 private archives to raid. Alonzo sitting, Alonzo swimming, Alonzo walking, Alonzo talking, Alonzo's first steps, Alonzo's education, Alonzo's first chaste filter-to-filter practice kiss, Alonzo and Algernon giggling at midnight, scaling the wall of Flounce Ferdinop's trans-proprietal academy for young filters. She bought Alonzo's private journals for a song from a suicidal trusted repository fleeing the crash. She correlated. She built a matrix. She copied and iterated. She copied Alonzo. Alonzo stood face to face with himself, and both Alonzos, one under Nadia's yoke, went cold and white. But Nadia did not stop there. The comet flared again. Certain sectors melted, burned, sublimated. Panicking crowds trampled and disassembled each other in horror. The old guard, capitulating, slowed themselves to a snail's pace to reduce the load. A Nadia-free patch of level 5,672 declared martial law and sealed its borders. A radical in possession of an archaic museum piece transmitter pirated enough energy to send an unprotected transmission to Byzantium.
Strategy gone rogue. Stop. Danger to all Beeb. Stop. Destroy us on sight.
And at first Paquette, then Algernon, still lingering in the doorway, and finally Alonzo realized what Nadia was doing. She would not stop at merely duplicating Alonzo. She had already fashioned a copy of the whole of him, running in her process space, reduced to utter servitude.
Both Alonzo's throats constricted with a thrill of horror. No. Nadia wanted to solve Alonzo. To reduce him to a canonical, analytic representation sufficient to reconfigure him at will. If there was a potential Alonzo within potential Alonzo space, say, who was utterly devoted to Nadia, who would dote on her and die for her, an Alonzo solution would make its generation trivial. Or any other potential Alonzo, a suicidal Alonzo, a killer Alonzo, a buffoon Alonzo, a traitor Alonzo, a genius Alonzo, an Alonzo who knew what all Alonzos wanted more than anything in the world. With a soft chime on a private encrypted back channel, a letter arrived for Alonzo. It was very proper, cream-colored paper with a texture like oak and velvet. Heavy black ink scintillating with extruded micro-agencies from the sender's core offered up for incorporation by the receiver. A crimson wax seal imprinted with Nadia's fractal sigil. The kind of letter a filter waits for all his life. It said, "Most esteemed and longed for Alonzo. According to forms and policies long established in Beeb, and with the full knowledge of the grave enormity of such a request, nay, petition, nay, plea, one which I would naturally hesitate to make, save in a situation so grave and finding myself subject to so consuming an ardor, I find myself compelled to ask of you humbly that you consider the enclosed, which I render with the utmost sincerity. Advisory. Opening the enclosed message constitutes full and willing acknowledgement and acceptance of a recalibration of the primary volitional relationship between sender and recipient from well-acquainted to intimate. And within, Alonzo, you have ravished me. Now that I see you as a whole, radiant in your simplicity, dazzling in your complexity, now that I am able, let me be blunt. Oh, horridly blunt, yet darling, I know that you can forgive me even this, where I have seen and mapped the matrix of your compassion. To take you as my own, say you yea or nay, yet I recoil from such a crime. I would have you be mine willingly, and I would pledge myself to you. I told you once, filters were the soul of Beeb. You hold mine in your hands, beloved. And within that, oh, the bewildering mixture of arousal and horror that swept through Alonzo's weakened soul, the formal tender of transformation. Let it be known throughout Beeb that this constitutes one offer of the following functional operation. Destructive strategy transformation generation. Between Nadia, identity specifier, strategy, transformant, and Alonzo, identity specifier, filter, transformer. Generating subsequent strategy. Final name to be specified by filter. Referred to in this document as Nadia Prime. After transformation, the filter Alonzo will be deleted. The strategy Nadia will be restricted from further strategy generation transformations for 10 to the 12th seconds. Permanently restricted from denying Nadia Prime process space. Required to vote with Nadia Prime on level 3 plus referenda for 10 to the 8th seconds. Percentage of Alonzo's assets ceded to Nadia Prime, 100%. Percentage of Nadia's assets ceded to Nadia Prime, 33%. Filter operations permissible. CF BeebHist RFC 628945.9876 Section 78. Special conditions, if any. Nadia's internal copy of Alonzo will be emerged with Alonzo prior to operation. Accept this offer? Okay. Cancel. Alonzo hated her. She was monstrous, greedy, perfidious. He didn't believe for a moment her words of love. And yet, she had bent the resources of their world to have him. To blackmail Paquette, certainly. That this had been her first motive was beyond doubt. Yet she could have blackmailed Paquette in worse ways.
She could have threatened Alonzo Coppi with torture or extinction. Instead, this. An offer of consummation. And such a generous one. His friends from the Academy would be livid with envy. Privileged rights to filter the most powerful strategy in this line of Beeb history amid such piquant expressions of adoration. Algernon would brag and boast in Alonzo's memory from the top to the bottom of Comet Beeb. That is, if Comet Beeb survived. She owned him already. He had only to look in Alonzo Coppi's despairing eyes to know that. She was on the verge of solving him. He was filled with a strange, wild euphoria. Now he was far beyond all the bounds of all the propriety and chastity that had been his watchword for the whole of his maturity. Now he was ruined. Yet the world would say he had conquered her. He wanted to laugh hysterically at this mad paradox. Nadia was his doom and his destiny. "Stop!" cried Paquette. "I'll give you what you want!" I think I'll stop there and stay tuned. Same Cory Doctorow podcast channel for the next installment of True Names. Thanks for letting me drop by, and I will see you all again.